Welcome to The Culture's Money. The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos.
Jamal Vitos. Those of you may know me on other social media platforms as Leo Graham Prince, but however it is that you know me, I hope you know me to be an advocate for financial literacy, generational wealth creation, and generational health. I'm excited about this episode because this one's going to be one of the most informational, I think, for business owners, entrepreneurs, and things in that matter, because we're going to get into some taxations in regards to business taxes, some capital gains taxes, everything that I just feel as though people neglect when they're in business or investing in stocks or whatever it is that you might be doing, real estate or anything like that. I am not a CPA. I'm not a tax person, but I have brought someone on who is more versed in that subject for me. So I want to introduce to you guys, Miss Elena, to the show.
Hello. How are y'all? I'm Southern.
Oh, that's even better. My grandmother was Southern, so that worked. So tell them a little bit about yourself before we get into the mix of everything.
Okay, sure. So I have been doing accounting, basically taxes, for a large CPA firm, one of the big four, for the past 12 years now. So I am a CPA. I'm a senior tax manager, and I focus mainly on real estate investing and private equity. And so I actually got on Twitter maybe not even a month ago, and I never even heard of Money Twitter. And I started an account, and then people just started talking about all this money they were making, and the tax side of me came out, and I just started tweeting about taxes. So obviously I'm passionate about it. That's how it all started. But like you said, I am a CPA. I've been doing it for 12 years, and I just want to, you know, start something where people can understand, like, yes, it's great to make more money, but you probably should be putting some aside to pay Uncle Sam.
It's funny because, like, I think I followed you and what, like, you may have been on Twitter a couple of days.
Yeah.
And I don't know, somebody maybe retweeted your thing and I kind of followed you, and your material was great. I was like, in like the first day, a couple of hours, I was like, I need to get her on the show. Like, this is the stuff that people need to hear, because on one of my earlier podcasts, I talked with a guest talking about how sometimes people, in my career, people have often confused finance with taxation.
Exactly.
They'll call me talking about, can I do their bookkeeping? Can I help them file their taxes? And I'm like, whoa, even though I passed accounting 101 and 102 pretty well, I'm not a CPA. That's not my thing.
Right.
I just know the basics, and I know enough in my field of investing, you know, about capital gains and all of that, but I am not a certified public accounting or an accountant in any way. I mean, there are certain, you know, accountants that are not certified CPAs, but taxation is not my thing. So you said you've been doing taxes for 12 years. How is that? Is it challenging? Is it boring? Like, what gets you up every day?
It's not. Okay. So when I was getting my master's in tax, I thought about going to law school, because people assume when you say you're CPA, you're good at math. I am terrible at math. Like, so bad. But tax is more law based. And so I didn't want to go into more debt going get a law degree. And so doing tax law, you can, you know, obviously be a CPA. So I love to write and research, and that's the part of my job that I actually do love to, like, I love it. Honestly, the boring part is the tax returns, and people assume that's all I do all year. Could you imagine doing tax returns all year? Like,
bruh,
you would not
I honestly thought that was all you guys did.
So what I think people saw one of my posts, someone on Twitter said something about Jeff Bezos and how he deserves all his money. And then people were, you know, saying stuff about corporations, because that's what I work on. I work on very large corporations like that. And so I commented, I'm like, well, you're only, the reason he gets away with it because you're taxed mainly on your W-2 income and all those, you know, capital gains and things we'll talk about later, stocks, that stuff is beneficial to have. So that's why people like Jeff Bezos and Warren Buffett don't get taxed a lot, because their W-2 income is very low. And so that's the part of my job that I love, is letting corporations and, you know, people understand their, the tax code is like, I think I read somewhere it's like 77,000 pages long. And there's 10 pages that will tell you what to do, and the rest will show you how to get around it. So if you actually sat down with a CPA and planned out what you want to do and lower your tax rate, that's the part of my job I love. So it's, that's what gets me out of bed every day.
And it's so funny you brought up Jeff Bezos, because, you know, of course, with this pandemic going on, there's a lot of people jumping into the investing market and all that, and great. And but I don't think they understand that when it says Jeff Bezos has a net worth of 140 billion or 70 billion right now, that's all stock.
Exactly.
I think people have this delusional understanding that, oh, he has 2, 3, 20, 30 billion dollars in cash. It does not work that way when you're worth that much money.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money to work.
I don't even think banks can have that much money. Like,
right. Where do you house that? For one, and for my banking and financial analyst standpoint, if I was worth that much money, I would tell you, one, you wouldn't want to have that in a bank, for one thing.
Exactly.
For a couple of reasons. One, banks they only insure $250,000 for every account.
Mm-hmm.
So you put $100 million in that account, and just so happen, let's say the bank goes under or files bankruptcy or whatever, you've lost all that money. Like, there's no getting it back, no crying to Uncle Sam. You're not getting the money back. You're getting $250,000 and they're gonna call it a day.
Mm-hmm.
But to your better point, let's dive into, tell them the benefit of a person like Jeff Bezos having a net worth of $170 billion, but he might only be making a salary of $1 or $2 million.
Oh, no, his salary is not even. So salary-wise, I make more than Jeff Bezos salary-wise, because you can look up his W-2. It's online. You know, most of them you can. He's been having the same salary, I don't even know how long, and it's only like $82,000. So Jeff Bezos W-2, what you get when you bring home and you're going to H&R Block or whoever, that's what he would be giving to H&R Block, $82,000.
So how does that work in a tax thing? Say he only made $82,000 for the year, right? You're getting taxed at that. I'm guessing, correct me if I'm wrong, but his tax bracket will be what, 20?
Yeah.
25%?
Yeah, it's about the 20% range. Yeah.
Okay, right. So he would get taxed there. But I'm assuming that throughout the year, he might have sold some shares to generate some money for whatever he wanted to do, whether it was buying purchases and all that. Talk to people about how different the capital gains tax is, or the selling of shares tax is, than it is actual income.
So there's short-term capital gain and long-term capital gain. And when you're on Instagram or Twitter and you see people investing in the stock market saying, hey, I flipped, you know, this stock in 2 days and made $10,000. Anytime you buy and sell a stock in a year, less than a year, that's a short-term capital gain. It's not beneficial to you. Yes, you'll get that money real quick and you may go pay off some debt. But depending on how much money you make doing that throughout the year, your tax rate is going to be the same as your W-2 income. So if you're in the 20% tax bracket with your W-2 income, you sell those short-term stocks, those stocks will get taxed at 20%. And if you do a lot of those sales, like I've been seeing people on Twitter, you're probably creeping up to 37%. And people are think, you know, they're making comments like, I just made more in a day than I did at my job in a month. And I'm like, okay, and now you see how much they take out of your payroll. So the IRS will be expecting that when you sold that stock in such a short period of time. So Jeff Bezos probably, I'm sure he does not sell stocks as quickly as people, you know, on Robinhood, Twitter, Instagram. His is probably long-term capital gains. And when you hold a stock for more than a year, then the tax rate can be, depending on your bracket, again, it could be 0%, 15%, you know, 20%. Like, it's so beneficial. So that's how Warren Buffett made the comment, like, I get taxed less than my secretary, because his money is in those long-term capital gains.
You're speaking to, like, this is why I wanted to do this with you, because I don't think people know this. And I'll say I knew this kind of by accident, because I've been investing so long, mm-hmm. and I got my finance degree after I had been investing for a couple of years. So, and I love finance so much that I just randomly read stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just what I do. So I knew the benefit. When I'm seeing all these people sell these options and sell these stocks, I'm like, bro, you're going to have to pay for every single transaction you're doing. You're running your tax bill up.
You are.
And you don't even know. Like, this is why I'm not a day trader. I am a long-term value investor. One, because over time, I like the way it works better. I don't send my emotions up and down with this daily volatility. You and I saw with the market today, it went down 700 points.
Oh, yeah.
I don't really care, because 5 years from now, I won't remember today it went down 700 points. But people who are doing these short sellers, these day traders, these swing traders, it's not so much the money or the profits that they're generating that I'm worried about. I'm worried about that you're going to lose the majority of that or end up in tax trouble, because you don't know how you're paying your taxes.
Exactly. And that's why, like, I'll show people, you know, you can do options trading. You can do this really quick. And then I'll throw in there the tax side of it and say, hey, if you did trade this in a week, you know, kudos to you for making $10,000. But not only does Uncle Sam want probably, you know, 20 to 37% of that, your state is going to want some of that too. So you're creeping up to half of your money going to taxes, and you don't even realize. People forget about the state side.
No, they do. You gotta pay state taxes. So do. And I don't understand how do you forget about the state when literally everybody knows April 15th, everybody looks forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you forget that on capital gains, yes, you have to pay some federal taxes, but depending on which state you're in, correct where I'm wrong, it might be a couple of states that don't really tax.
There's nine that don't. Gains, right? Like, if you're in Texas and Florida, good job.
Right.
But the rest of us is, and then don't forget, you know, if you're living in New York City, oh God, you are really getting. So that's why I want people, yes, I want people to win, make money in the stock market, you know, but they need to also look long term. And that's why I also say, because I think someone posted, you know, well, I reinvest my money that I make. I'm like, the IRS doesn't care. The minute you sold that stock on Robinhood, and even if you bought another stock with it, you will get a statement next year for tax season with all your buying and selling and the amount of money. And then the IRS is going to say, okay, make sure you put it on your tax return, because people also need to realize the IRS gets copies of those statements too.
Yes.
Like there's a box you check on your tax return and it will say, you know, broker statement, like I got a copy, or copy A was sent here or something. Like the IRS knows. So don't think all this trading, if you're doing it real fast, they won't have a clue. No, they will know. So just go ahead and make sure you're setting something aside. And if you don't know what it is, you know, because you're doing it so fast, at the end of the year, just put something to the side. Like, you need to have something to the side, because you don't want your first year or however many years you've been doing this to be great and then you turn around and look back and say, I don't even have money to pay my tax bill.
Yes, exactly. But it's not even just that. With all these people who are, you and I both see, bragging about, I have $10,000 a day or $20,000 a day, bruh, find you an accountant or a CPA.
That's why I put that in my post. I'm like, find a CPA.
Like, I think it was like maybe the first couple of days that I had followed you, I actually just randomly, I hadn't even realized you were a CPA. Yeah, I randomly said, I'm all glad that y'all making this money, but please make sure you pay your taxes. Mm-hmm. Like, please make sure y'all are paying attention to these capital gains. And if you don't know what you're doing, hire a CPA. Hire an accountant.
Yeah, because I think it's because when people make that money and then you'll start flexing a little bit. You know, it's fine. I'm all for that. You can go and buy a car or pay off your debt. But again, remember, if you use 100% of that money to do those things, now you're leaving yourself with nothing to pay your taxes with.
Right. And I think, what do you, just on your professional opinion, just based off what you've told me in the last 2 minutes, I feel like at the very least, off every transaction that I make, I should calculate at the very least, say if I made $10,000, I had a $10,000 debt. I feel like I should at the very least put $2,500 away.
Yeah, I was going to say about 25%, because you're going to have, you know, your deductions on your tax return, your standard itemized deductions or all those other things. But 25% is like a safe bet. Like, I'm going to put a quarter of all my gains away into another account. Don't put it into your regular everyday account. Don't put it into your trading account. Like, put it separate and say, this is for my taxes. And then if you, at the end of the year, it comes out less, then, you know, good for you. You have some more money. Or if you don't want that sticker shock at the end, like,
yeah,
it's not fun.
Definitely. But even if you come up and say, and I was thinking on the other side, like you said, depending on what trading you do, you could creep up to 37%. Even if you end up, you know, if you do 25%, I feel like people can absorb the shock, oh, I owe a little bit more.
Yeah.
If they've already set across that 25%, you're like, okay, I can give this to Uncle Sam. And then probably, you know, if you've already, by the time you file these taxes, you're in a new year, you're probably making more profits. And then you probably can toss some money towards that to pay off the previous year.
Right.
So it's not really that big of an absorption.
Mm-hmm.
But just based off what you said, I thought 25% was a good number. What have you seen from people you're filing? Your eyes are fresher than mine. I've been on Twitter for like 10 years now, so I'm a little jaded. Everything people say is kind of crazy. But what are some of the bad financial tax moves you've heard people just tweak in regards to investing just over these last 5 to 6 weeks you've been on?
That's the thing. I hardly see anyone tweet tax.
Oh, wow.
I think that's why my page started to get, you know, so much traction so fast, because most of the tweets that I've seen is how to make money from your side hustle, how to make money from affiliate marketing. And though, even, okay, stocks aside, you're not trading because you're not comfortable. Say you're affiliate marketing with someone, or, you know, I honestly don't know what drop shipping is, but say you're doing that, because I've seen comments like, I made $40,000 last month drop shipping. Now you're creeping into, you're self-employed. Self-employment has another tax that can get to you. So you're not only taxed on capital gains if you're running around in the stock market, and if you're doing affiliate marketing and making $1,000 to $2,000 a week and all that stuff, now you're not only in your regular tax bracket, you're also, you know, subject to self-employment at that point.
Okay, so let's kind of move into that a little bit, because I know you've seen this. There's a whole side to Twitter, I don't know if you've seen yet, because you came into Black Wealth Twitter. Mm-hmm. There's a whole side of Twitter called LLC Twitter.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Everybody tells people, as soon as they start a business, start an LLC.
Oh, I've seen a few of those, and I'm just like, here we go.
Right. And I'm so blown, for one, again, being, even though I'm not a CPA, financial analysis is my thing, and I can just see the nonsense already. Like, there's a level of taxation with LLCs as opposed to S Corps and C Corps. And people really don't tell people all of this when they're just throwing out, oh, get an LLC or get an S Corp and all this other stuff. Can you kind of break down that? I know we don't have that type of time to go in detail, but basically, are people telling people wrong about these incorporations, and are they doing it too soon? Or are they doing it, you know, in the wrong aspects and that type of thing?
from my perspective, telling someone to, you know, go out and get an LLC the minute you start doing something. An LLC, which is a limited liability company, that's what it is. It's limiting your liability in case something happens. So, for instance, if you are going out and getting a rental property and you want to create an LLC, that's fine, because if you have a renter in that property and they fall and they want to sue you, you can say, well, you're not suing me personally. You're going to sue the LLC. Like, it's protecting your personal assets from the business assets. But if you're just starting and you're making $500, you don't need an LLC yet. Like, it, again, it's just...
You spend more money on the LLC than you made.
You do. And also, again, depending on what state you're in, your LLC can get taxed too. But for federal purposes, most of the time, if you're the only owner of an LLC, it's called a single member LLC. The income from the LLC will just flow up onto your 1040. So it's, again, it's there to protect.
So you're still getting taxed like an individual.
Yeah, you're still getting taxed like an individual. The purpose of it is to protect the business assets from your personal assets. So that's pretty much what LLCs are for. My clients use them. They have usually have one for every property that they invest in. Again, because if somebody falls, they don't want them coming out of their bank account. You can go after the business, but don't come after me.
Okay. So is an S-Corp, I hear it's a little bit different. So you won't get taxed as an individual, but it kind of passes through the corporation.
Exactly. So S-Corps, so I did post on my Twitter, like, the difference between LLCs and S-Corps, because I saw someone saying, yeah, I want an S-Corp. And I'm thinking, again, S-Corps are very difficult. And if you mess them up, the IRS will probably come audit you, because you're also compared to other S-Corps in your same type of industry. So an S-Corp, like you said, the income passes up through it. The thing with S-Corps is you can pay yourself a salary and deduct your salary, and you can flow all the money up. But S-Corps are complicated. I would not be doing S-Corps if you need a CPA, because there's paperwork that you have to abide by. You need, like, shareholder information. Like, it's kind of run, like, you need the documentation like a C-Corp. And most people don't have that kind of money. Again, if you're big and you have a lot of things going on and it's beneficial to you and you want to pay yourself a salary and have different types of deductions, go for it. But if you're small and you're just starting out, just start collecting the money, set up a separate bank account so you know, like, this is different than personal, and kind of grow from there. You don't have to have a business entity type from the start.
Right. So what do you think, what type of income or revenue should you be generating before you go into a LLC? Are we talking maybe $20,000 a month, maybe a little less?
I want to get into more real estate investing. So if you're house hacking, like, say I have a house and I have four rooms and I rent out three of them, I'm not going to put my house into an LLC. I'm just going to collect the rent from everyone and, you know, call it a day and put in my lease. Like, if you fall, you know, don't even try suing me. So house hacking, I wouldn't put that into an LLC. It's the minute I start to go out and, like, acquire an asset, like my first multifamily asset, I will probably put that into an LLC, because, you know, the house could be worth $100,000 plus and I'm collecting all this rent and who knows what could happen with tenants. So that's when I would start considering it. If you're just, you know, doing business like affiliate marketing, I wouldn't do it. Like, if you're making, I don't want to say like hobby level money, because that's horrible. But if it's not,
no, I mean, that's,
if
I mean,
not surpassing,
people treat it as a hobby. Yeah. So that's fine.
If it's like your side, like if it's a true side hustle, like I'm just collecting like another $500 to $1,000 a month, you know, a couple thousand. No, don't put that into an LLC. Just start a separate business checking account. The minute this becomes almost your full time job, then start setting up your business.
Okay. So you were talking about, you were just talking about real estate and everything. What are some of the niches and, you know, eccentricities people should know about real estate taxation?
I think people get into real estate tax, and this money is made in real estate. Most of my clients are billionaires because of real estate. And I like to say all these retail stores that you see, they're going out of business, but their real estate is worth a lot of money on their books. The thing about real estate and how people get rich is because the depreciation expense, it's not an out-of-pocket expense. That's an expense that the IRS is giving you that is not a cash flow problem. It's like, if I invest in an apartment complex, I can depreciate that, the value of it, over 27 and a half years. Like, you're getting that free expense right there. And I think people miss that part of real estate. You have to remember to take the depreciation. Yes, people know that I have to deduct repairs and maintenance and the taxes that I pay on the property. But depreciation is huge. And any improvement you do, like now, depending on what kind of property you get, you can deduct up to 50% of that, or sometimes 100% up front. So people miss out on the depreciation. So when they have, when again, these big corporations are in the news and that people are like, you know, they don't pay any taxes. How is that possible? Real estate, because there's a line on the tax return for depreciation, and they use that to their advantage to the point where it offsets their income so much to where they're in a loss position. And that's how they get out of it.
Mm. So that's interesting. I've read income statements and financials where a company, let's say like a Deere, depreciates like the equipment, like their tractors and everything, over a period of 15 years or something like that.
Right. Whatever the life of the equipment is. Financial statements is different. For tax, you can accelerate depreciation. So that's where people get confused, because they'll go Google and say Amazon made billions of dollars, but on their tax return, I'm pretty sure they're accelerating some depreciation, and that's how they get to the point where it's so low. It's different for financial statements and for taxes.
Here's a question I know some people, I've had people ask me, and I really couldn't tell them over the years. Like, say you have an entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. And they have a company properly set up, whether it be an LLC or whatever type of entity they need to set up. And they use their personal car for like travel for the business. What part of the car can they write off for like business expense? Is it the gas? Is it the car payment? Is it repairs? I think people, they don't know exactly, like you said, the tax code is 77,000 pages long. Yeah. They necessarily don't know how to get around it. Like, what's a small insight for them in regards to that?
I just wouldn't use a personal car to do that. Like, just go and that's why I'm like, I think that's where people get into trouble. And mm-hmm. that's also a way that you're going to be paying your CPA more, because you didn't separate everything and they'll have to do it for you. Just when you know, if you're traveling a lot and you're driving your car for, you know, business, and you're writing off the gas and the mileage and all that stuff. Even at work in corporate America, we have a credit card, and business expenses go on that credit card, because they want to track that separately. And then if I say I got sent to Florida for training and I went out for dinner, and say my per diem, the amount that they allow me to spend for dinner, is $40. Well, if the first $40 will go on my corporate card, and then if I want to go get drinks, that's not what they're paying for, because it's not business related, it would go on my personal card. So when we do our business expenses at the office, we have to separate that. And it's easy because I have two cards. If I didn't have two cards, could you imagine going through your bank statement every month, trying to separate that out? Just keep it simple. Start a checking account. Say, this is for all my business expenses. This is for my personal expenses.
And I agree with you. A friend of mine called me maybe a week or so ago. She had gotten a business loan, and I think the SBA told her that she had to track all expenses for this loan for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And again, she called me like, I need your help. I need you to help me. I say, first of all, I am not a tax. I am not a tax attorney. Like, that's not my thing. I'm not a tax person, a tax payer. I'm not a CPA. But I did give her this one bit of advice. I said, do not put that money in any existing checking accounts that you have.
Exactly.
Opening a new checking account with no history, no nothing, and put it there and track it that way. I say, for one, your monthly statement will be like a receipt for you anyway. Mm-hmm. And then any other small receipts that you keep, just keep that for that specific account. So I'm with you on that. I think people get mixed up when they're mixing the money, especially when they're starting off early, like you said, before they start the LLC and all that. They're just mixing and matching the money or their sales with their personal checking account. So at the end of the year, when you go to your CPA, you're like, I don't know which one is which. Mm-hmm. Like you're using everything out of the same account.
You can't remember it that way. Like there's no way you're going to remember all your different expenses if you keep them in one checking account. So just checking accounts are free. Go open one and say, this is for my business. I'm not going to use it for anything else. And it's also good to have that, you know, if you get audited by the IRS, say that happens, you don't want to give them everything because then they're going to look through everything. You want to make sure it's separate from what your personal account is showing versus this is for the business. Because could you imagine the IRS looking through your personal checking statements?
You went to get business audit. You ended up personally.
I know. They're going to be questioning you like, oh, okay. You spent that much at Rouse's and Amazon. Okay. You know, you don't want that. So just keep it separate.
Okay. Here's a big question. Why do you think culture member business owners, why do you think they make the mistake of trying to handle their taxes on their own? Or they wait too late. Like they haven't been tracking their expenses and all that all year. Now all of a sudden tax season is around. Now they're trying to get a CPA to clean up everything like that they've done over the past 12 months. Why do you think the mentality works like that?
I think it's because people don't. Well, one, I didn't grow up knowing many. I don't think I knew any accountants. My mom took some accounting classes, but I don't think I knew anyone. I didn't really know what they did. I honestly thought everybody just worked for the IRS. Like I didn't know what accountants did. And then as I went to college and my mom basically said, you know, you can major in one of these, like accounting, law, engineer, doctor, pick one because you're not sleeping on the couch. So mm-hmm. I picked accounting. And then I started to realize accounting's not just balancing a checkbook. Like I just thought it was like somebody balancing your checkbooks for you and may feel like you can do that yourself. But again, with the tax code being so long, you are going to mess something up. You didn't go to school for that. You may know how to use QuickBooks and all that stuff, and you may be organized, but you can find an accountant to do that for you, a CPA, and just spend a couple $100 doing it. Because if you don't and it's a mess, we charge our clients way more when it's a mess and trying to fix it. So it's just better to put that as an expense and not feel like, don't make it feel like, you know, this, oh, it's just money I have to spend. No, it's an investment in your business. Like you want your business to run, because if the IRS came in and said you owe all these taxes and you can't afford, your business is going to shut down. So just look at an accountant as an investment in your business. Because I think I wrote on my Twitter one day, I said, my clients, when I worked on high net worth people, they all had a CPA, a financial advisor, and a lawyer. Like that's, they have those three people in their life. Yes, they're smart. They can run a business, but they know that those three people are very important to keep their business going.
I think you're saying something there because people sometimes miss it. Yes, because I've seen people say this. A CPA is not an estate planner.
No.
An estate planner is not a financial advisor.
No.
Like a lawyer is not, you know, a combination of all. I think people, they try to skim off the top because they like, I don't want to pay the lawyer and the CPA and the tax attorney and the estate planner and the financial advisor and the certified financial planner. Mm-hmm. They like, I don't want to play all that. When I'm like, my thinking is always, you're going to pay more being cheap.
Mm-hmm.
They're kicking the money out first and getting everything set up in the back end. Like it's cheaper to set it up right than it is to correct it when it's wrong. That's like when you skim on a real estate renovation. Ooh. You skimmed on the pipes, you skimmed on the you skimmed on the material. Now you got a tenant in there, the roof then caved in, the pipes didn't work. Now you're paying three times the amount because now you screwed. because you screwed up some of your tenants' belongings, their furniture, all that. Like, don't be cheap.
It's kind of like investing in clothing. Yes, you can buy the Fashion Nova and, you know, the very overnight clothing, you know, just quick. But how often do you have to buy that? Because it doesn't last. Right. Like, you'll have to keep buying it. That's why people always say, you know, invest in timeless, you know, classic clothes. And you may not get a lot at first, but it will last over time. So if you're being cheap, you're probably in the end, like you said, you're going to spend more money in the end. So just make the investment up front.
Oh my God. I think we've covered so much today, and I feel like I'm definitely going to have you on again, because it's like, it's just so rich what you need. And I feel like I'm one of those people that you got to give them small bites. Mm-hmm. You can't overwhelm them with the amount of information. I definitely think you've given them enough starter information and gems for the beginning. But generally, I let my guests give the last word, a piece of advice based off what you've seen on Twitter and the things you've seen in your profession. Just give them a little bit words of wisdom that you actions you think they should take or things that they should avoid just to, you know, put themselves in the best taxation position.
The piece of advice I would give people is don't let the materialistic things you see that people are buying with their stock gains and, you know, rental property money, don't let that get to you, because you don't know what their expenses are. So if you're making money, and, you know, again, I am all for Black people making more money, just remember Uncle Sam will want a piece of it. So plan for it. That's it.
That was good. Oh, yeah. Also got to give them your Twitter handle, your Instagram, your website if you're doing tax, you know, preparing or consultation. Definitely let them know about the course that you have out. I'm pushing a course, y'all. I'm helping them sell it. So definitely let them know that. You can find it on her Twitter or my Twitter, but let them know all of that.
Yes. So my Instagram is, I'm still trying to build that one up. So we're going to push that to the side. So my Twitter, because I have my personal one where y'all don't want to see my little gumbo and all that. I make gumbo. So my Twitter handle is at Lana, LANA. Cares, KARES 823. So Lana Cares 823. And I'm the Investing Fashionista. You'll see me on there with that. And my book that I'm starting, and it launches June 30th. It is called The $100 Investor. And I started writing this book because, again, you know, I'm happy for you. You're making money on Twitter and all that stuff and you're flexing, but everybody doesn't start off with a lot of money to invest. So this book is going to teach you how, if you just started with $100, just give up the Chick-fil-A and the Starbucks for a month, started with $100. And this is how you can grow your money to, you know, $500 to $1,000 just with that $100. And I'm going to throw in some taxes for you. So you'll get to see that in more detail than the little bit of amount of, you know, time I have on Twitter. So it's called The $100 Investor.
All right. So we thank Alana for coming on. This is such good information. I'm definitely going to have her on again. And we'll probably, in between me and her, we'll decide on subjects she might want to talk about, depending on as she experiences Twitter more and she sees things people are promoting incorrectly or may not know or may need some information. We're all about serving the culture. So I appreciate her sacrificing a little bit of her time to come on and give the listeners some great tax information. You guys make sure to follow her on Twitter. Make sure that you get that $100 investor, because you guys always ask me how much y'all should start with. She's giving you the answer. So I appreciate all this time that you guys taking to listen, and we'll be talking to you guys soon.
Thank you.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitose, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money, baby.